What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Off the ball.
I just love playing any sort of ball, team sport. And as you mentioned, like traveling around the world, like it was insane. Like Sydney, New Zealand, San Francisco, Russia, South Africa, America, Canada. Been to some amazing places, and all while playing sport. Like again, growing up as a girl, I never even thought this was a dream.
Off the ball,
weeknights from 7 and weekends from 1.
This is OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app.
The Saturday panel. On Off the Ball.
And welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're also streaming live as well now, so you can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it. This is the panel. As always, at 1:30 on a Saturday until 2:30, we're going to review the sporting week with the journalists David Kelly and Cliona Foley. David, Cliona, how are you today? Okay, we just have an issue with Cliona's line there. David, I'm just going to start with Dermot Connolly. You wrote a piece in the Irish Independent yesterday about enigmatic, brilliant footballer that won 6 All-Ireland titles, 2 All-Stars. What would his legacy be? Because he was just somebody who lit up the summer. And from a Dublin perspective, if you're a Dublin man or a Dublin fan, I know we both are, so we'll get clean as neutral view in a second. There were moments when Dermot Connolly just did things other players couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I it was overnight. It was a classic Dublin GA statement dropped not to suit newspapers or media, which is actually a thing I liked about him. And I was talking... somebody sent me a nice message yesterday about the piece, and that was actually one thing from being a media person secondarily after being a fan of sport that I liked about Dermot, that he didn't engage with the media. He didn't play the game. I know he had, a Beko endorsement back in the day, but he wasn't trundled out seemingly with every passing month to endorse something and to drop... the throwaway nanny goats that occupy the feeding frenzy in high summer. He always did the Hill 16 podcast, which I liked, and he responded to them in person the day after his retirement. So I like the sense that he had an individual streak about him, kind of like, a Darragh O'Shea back in the day, or a John Hayes in rugby, or even a Duffer in soccer. You know what I mean? They were just different. They almost occupied their own space, and they wanted to play the game, and then everything else was appended onto that. They loved the game. They worked hard at the game. But the frills, the nonsense, the bells and whistles, this stuff that we're doing here, it didn't really appeal to them. And from being around with people going to games and drinking pints and singing songs and stories after games, that, he was a darling of the city. He was a king of the city. He there was a presence about him almost that, if he was playing, there was an anticipation. And I think for the opposition, listening to Tomás O'Shea, and his brother Mark this week, and Kieran Donaghy on your shows, the reverse for the opposition. They felt a sort of frisson of nervous energy when he was in the Dublin team. And yeah, he had all the gifts. I hate using the word genius, but he had gifts, but he worked on those gifts, Like genius like that doesn't come easily in any sport. And I think that's, you know, the fundamental thing which should be said about Dermot Connolly, that he had genius and class and skill, ambidextrous, a vision, awareness, a strength as well. But none of that was afforded him at birth or as a child. He worked in all those aspects diligently. And it's interesting, you know, people were saying, even colleagues of mine, that, should he got more out of his career? Is it the old George Best thing? And they mentioned the two All-Stars, but that's got nothing to do with Dermot Connolly. I mean, that's got to do with, sadly, the perceptions and prejudices of others. But to accumulate what he has for club and county was astonishing. And he did it by not just embroidering the team, but by being part of the team, and a team led mostly by Jim Gavin, who didn't suffer fools or indulge excess. For Jim Gavin to persevere with him and to retrieve him from the wilderness says a lot about what Dermot Connolly brought to Dublin teams.
Absolutely, David. Yeah, I remember the 2017 final against Mayo, and he hadn't featured because he had a 12-week ban. And to me, he was the most calm person in a frenzy of 10 minutes towards the end of the game when Mayo were 2 points up. Of course, went into injury time as well, but Dermot Connolly, both feet, he was like a quarterback in the middle of the park, scored a point, won that free for Dean Rock. Cliona, we're two dubs. We're probably close to it. Sometimes when you're close to it, you can be a little bit blind to the views of the outside world. Dermot Connolly, where does he stand in your assessment of the last 20 years of Gaelic footballers and the ranking of them?
Well, you know, genius keeps getting thrown around, and when he was good, he was absolutely brilliant, and you know, the way he could spin a ball off his foot, just so double footed. So what I liked about him actually, John, was that he became a better player as he became older. I think Pat Gilroy and Jim Gavin had that effect on a lot of those Dublin players, that even though they were getting older, they were getting better. If you saw Connolly in his early career, you know, we know he had a run in with Gilroy early on that probably changed the course of his career. But he was a classic, you know, talented forward who could be too selfish. But what I really liked about him in his later years was that he became a team player, which I thought was fantastic. And he used those gifts that he had, you know, that pass to Kilkenny, that vision that he had. He always had his head up. He was so brilliant. His skill was so good that he could see stuff way before it happened because his head was always up. And he was, as Dave said, he was physically gifted as well. And he must have trained incredibly hard because he was always in incredible shape. But I do think there is a bit too much of the... There was always a thing of why was he never Player of the Year? He was only nominated for once, which is in 2014. And I think he lacked consistency and that ability to flare up and get himself in trouble. I think that went against him. And even though everybody else from the other 31 counties would say, God, he was absolutely gifted and you loved seeing him play. You know, you'd pay to go in to see Dermot Connolly, even if you weren't a dub. But he got himself in trouble a few times. I think, was he sent off in two All-Ireland semi-finals, Dave? Would you two know? I think I remember.
He was sent off against Donegal in a semi and Mayo in a final.
Yeah, that's right.
In the drawing game.
Yeah, and so those little things, like, you know, I'm not on the All-Star committee, and they, you know, I've heard people argue on the All-Star committee that it wasn't discipline that went against him, but consistency sometimes goes against you, or inconsistency, and I just think that was his weakness. But as regards the top five players I'd want to watch in the last 10 years, he was right up there. I think Colm Cooper and Dermot Connolly were two, and Michael Murphy, there's three off the top of my head. You would pay in to go to see them any day of the week.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Paying in to go to see it. 53106. Connolly was great, but not as good as Kieran McDonald from Mayo. Listeners, what do you think about Connolly's impact on the game of Gaelic football? But it's not always going to be the same where you're going to have a Brian Fenton or James McCarthy or Stephen Cluxton of brilliant consistency. You're going to have your Mavericks. You're going to have your players that are going to come in there and do things. Like Connolly, for me, the 2017 final was the biggest test of the five in a row. And he was the major part in my mind of why Dublin came through that test against Mayo. When Mayo, after 5 years of trying, nearly had that Holy Grail seized. David, for you, what was the biggest Connolly moment? Was it in that club final against Castlebar? Was it those points against Tyrone, maybe putting a Tyrone team that had Dublin's number to the sword? Was there a day or a moment or a performance that has stood out for you?
It's funny, I started off with the last memory. It's interesting to talk about sending us off. He got sent off in Jim Gavin's first game for the 21s way back in the day. But I go back to, you know, the past last year and just that impact. I mean, it didn't define the game, but it almost defined the reason why he was there, you know, winning that break. And I watched it in a kind of loop, and you know, he almost had two options, and almost it was a pass that was meant for two people. And were Dublin not so well rounded and well oiled, I mean, Mannion and Kilkenny would have collided, caromed into each other. But Mannion just pulled away and Kilkenny plucked it. But just it just everything was there in that kind of instant. But yeah, I mean, I remember a Saturday night, a point against Tyrone. I remember the Donegal stuff. I mean, in 13, I mean, just, and even was it a couple of years later, 2016, you know, the ones where you know, you're constantly, he was constantly beating the press and that northern kind of blanket. I wasn't at the Castlebar Mitchells game, so that's kind of a YouTube later that night. You were probably there, Cliona, but that was just, yeah. Looking back at it now, extraordinary. And moments. I mean, it's just, you know, I went down to see Pat's Chris Forrester last week at a Thunderbolt. You know, it's the moments like that you go to sport for. And you don't come away. You come away marvelling, maybe later, at James McCarthy's eternal brilliance, or Kilkenny's eternal brilliance, or Cluxton's reliable brilliance. But the wow, that kind of taking your breath away, that supping a pint and looking at your friend wordless and just going, boy, that guy. And Kieran McDonald does it for you, and Gooch does it for you, and all these wonderful players. And it's the essence of him almost, you know, the sense of him. And yeah, he was a bad boy, but, you know, some of us treated him harshly. I mean, these guys are amateurs, and I know he had a, you know, off-field excursions as well. But these guys are human beings. I think that's forgotten about. And as I say, he never played the game with us. So I thought it was a bit unseemly that a lot of us played the game with him, and not very well.
The goal in the club final was an incredible, that goal was just extraordinary. I watched it again this morning, because when you watched it in real time, you couldn't believe how good it was. And it's one of those, you know, those moments where you go back and you look at it from the different angle, but actually the angle, the power, what he did beforehand was just a sensational goal. And he had that ability. But the thing about him was that, you know, his tendency to flare up. I think that's what stopped him from, you know, getting player of the year, probably, you know. Yeah, but hold on. But it is what sets you out as in terms of, if you want to win awards. I'm not talking about, I don't care how many awards he won. He's loads of All-Irelands.
Awards have nothing to do with it.
A lot of people talk about it. A lot of Dublin people say, oh, he never got, you know, the recognition. He only got the two All-Stars or whatever. I'm saying, I think that's what went against him. The Carlo situation, you know, it was a moment of madness, but he was prone to them. But for all of that, as I said, for me, I'd watch him all day, every day. And also, I loved that kind of that rebel thing that he had, you know, coming out in the Leitrim top or the tank top before the All-Ireland final or whatever, which I think is interesting because, you know, people say, oh, he didn't care about the media and he didn't care what people thought of him. But I mean, when you do that, you are sending out some kind of a signal, even if it's to say, I don't care what you think of me. Do you know what I mean? So I thought that was always interesting. Like, you're right as well. It's interesting what Dave says. I mean, wouldn't you love, you know, we see so many books from players nowadays. Wouldn't you love to see a book?
You want to see a good book. You want to see a good book. Really? There's so many books out there that are just books, you know. And I know I know how hard it is to write a book. But it's interesting about always, it's always the way, oh, it's consistency over the season and this and that. I would have given Connie an All-Star for that performance in the Mayo game in 17 alone. That's just my own personal view. But how are Dublin equipped now, David, for this unusual knockout championship without Jack McCarthy, without Dermot Connolly to call upon? Who are the players coming through? How is Desi set? What is the landscape like? Because it's going to creep up on us, this championship, more closely than we think.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's such a unique landscape. I mean, the last time I was here, we didn't know when sport was going to happen again. And we're just hoping the Bundesliga passed off safely. It seems like only yesterday, but it seems like 6 years ago. It's going to be a fascinating challenge. There's an element that for everybody, like, listen, Armagh might be able to field the team when the league resumes in a fortnight. So who knows what may happen. There's an element of a grace about this. So this is a grace. This is a free throw. There'll be no supporters there might be a few thousand supporters, but there's not going to be a championship like we know it. Championship games will be played on multiple occasions in the same ground, possibly. There may be changes of venue. Teams may not be able to fulfill fixtures with their full squads. So this is a personal opinion. I think conjecture about the championship in that kind of very deep and pointy-headed and meaningful way that we all go about it in a May, it's almost irrelevant. It's just let's get it played for the benefit of the nation as a whole and for all those poor, lonely people who can't go to pubs because apparently pubs spread the pandemic. And let's just enjoy the championship. I think Desi will be under obviously unusual pressure, and that can be heightened because of this stringent championship, this curtailed championship. But I would have been willing to give him anyway, even before this. Cliched free first year to get his foot under the table, and even more so now, because there's no even semblance of a philosophy or obviously he has a style from his underage days, but in terms of developing a broad picture of Desi Farrell's Dublin, we're not going to see that in a couple of months.
John, I think this takes the pressure off Desi hugely.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't know what's going to happen with the season. We're also going to see, I think, possibly a very different kind of football played. It's winter football. It's completely different. As Dave says, you know, it's not a year where we're going to see anybody put their stamp.
It's going to be 7 points to six, guys. Is it every game?
Well, it all depends. Partly it depends on the weather, doesn't it? Like, you know, we just don't know what it's going to be like. It's a total unknown. But the one thing I think it does do is it does give Desi Farrell a free pass with Dublin and just let him settle in and not have any of the crazy pressure that's usually on the Dublin manager, particularly to continue this run.
Okay, getting some text in here on Dermot Connolly, 53106. Hi, lads. I agree he was gifted and brilliant, but if he's part of a lesser team than Dublin, he might be remembered as a player that lost trophies for his teams. The likes of Mayo might have depended on him far more on a consistent basis, that is from Paddy and Carlo. Dermot Connolly will be a loss, no doubt, for this year's championship, like the Gooch and Jamie Clark, one of only a handful of players around that who could do the unexpected and prize out a goal opening, that is from Richard Holden in Maynooth. Tyrone 2011, Kerry 2013 and 16 semi-finals, 2014 club final, Mayo 2016 All-Ireland final replay, 2017 All-Ireland final, plenty of consistency there, Cliona. Joke, he didn't get more than two All-Stars. That is from Ray in Dublin. And Dundalk, guys, we're going to talk about it later on the show with Damien Delaney, Dan McDonald, Johnny Ward. But with the sacking of Vinnie Perth a few weeks ago, Filippo Giovagnoli coming in, you're thinking, looking on the outside, this is chaotic for Dundalk, who won the league last year. But it's all kind of, in a fairy tale manner, come together beautifully. Moldovan, Andorran and Faroese opposition beaten. And now a 3 million windfall. It's been some week for Dundalk, Lena.
Oh, it's been the story of the week for me. And watching Thursday night, you just could not be delighted for them. Just the whole notion, really, in which the new manager was questioned. And, you know, apparently he doesn't have a professional coaching. He doesn't have his top coaching badge. All of that stuff coming from America. I love the way he calls it a bracket. He's even got the American language in. Just everything about the way they won, played badly. but were really, really gritty. Gary Rogers, like, you know, what a guy, still there. I don't know, is he 102 at this stage? But that man is unbelievable. He's just, do you know what I mean? When they really needed him, like, he was there and holding them together. And then just everything else about that happened about it. I mean, the third goal was just such a great goal. But I just, it's the fighting spirit of the town, really, if you like. Football is bonkers, you know. League of Ireland is equally bonkers in terms of the money. You know what, they were going to be 2 million down, now they're going to be 3.8 million up, plus whatever potential that's going to happen now, and now they've got Arsenal. And just the way Giovinoli reacted and said that he wanted to get Spurs, he wanted to get Mourinho, just cracked me up. But I thought there was just lovely joy in that, and it was just such a shame that that their fans weren't there.
As a Pats man, David, what was your assessment of the Lily White's telegraph to the Europa League group stage and the visit of the Gooners to Ireland?
We'd love to see the Gooners gunned, John, obviously. Yeah, as a Pats fan, yeah, I mean, I remember getting literally stoned coming out of Oriel Park 100 years ago when denied a league title up there, although we did win subsequently under Brian Kerr. But as a League of Ireland man, as a soccer man, as a sportsman, I'm ecumenical in my tastes, as you all know. It was wonderful. It was great. I was struck by watching it on Thursday. You know, the nervousness was palpable. You know, this was the 3 million Euro shot. I mean, they talk about the richest game in the world, the championship, and you can see the nerves there. I mean, this is similar because it was not win or bust, but I mean, I know the owners were kind of half thinking about, is this gig going to work? Should we have bought into the Dublin club instead of Dundalk, or should we have moved Dundalk to Dublin sooner, or what's the story? So there's a lot of conjecture there. A lot of people in Dundalk weren't happy. So there was a lot riding on it, and it was interesting that, you know, we were watching an Irish team, an Irish footballing team playing football, you know, not, you know, damaging the pigeons, as Billy Baxter used to say. They were playing football the right way, as football people like to say, against, you know, an opposition who were just kick and rush and boot it up and hope for a corner, which is a kind of an interesting reverse in watching Irish international teams of the last kind of 10 more years, you know, who kind of have a similar device against the superpowers like Georgia of this world. So that was kind of an interesting dynamic, and they'll have the same thing going through the group stages. They will try and play football and most likely will get thumped by Arsenal, maybe not. Shamrock Rovers took the lead against Spurs in the group stages under Michael O'Neill, I know, but they did lose eventually heavily. But they performed well and with pride and with dignity. And I think that's important. You know, there's a little bit of money's in the bank. It doesn't matter what happens now. But, I mean, it's important to kind of do things the right way. But, yeah, it's an interesting story. I mean, it's not finished yet. I mean, Oriel Park, the ground where I was coursed out of 100 years ago, is still the same. It's still dilapidated. It's still a joke. It's still really sad that Dundalk can't play the European matches in their home ground. They're not the only club with that issue, I know. And Shamrock Rovers will be kind of ironically looking at all this as well. But they have the chance to do what Dundalk have done next year, taking the champions route, where you can get this kind of golden path of Andorra and Moldova and sneak your way around the foothills of European club competitions and get some great riches. So, yeah, it's a wonderful story. And, the, you know, penny for Vinnie Perth's thoughts, he was there. Just the club, as I say, Danny McDonald, our soccer correspondent, has told you all about this before. It was a bit of a mess. So, you know, it's been rescued temporarily. We don't know. We'll see what the long-term benefits are. But it's a wonderful winter, and it gets them going for another year. But they haven't won the league, so will they be in Europe next year? We'll see what happens. But it's a great week for them.
Okay, got to take a break, David Kelly and Cliona Foley. Chelsea 1-0 up on Crystal Palace. Ben Chilwell, the new signing, has scored at Stamford Bridge. Texan here on 53106 on the Saturday panel, reviewing the week. Dermot Connolly, a flawed genius, somewhat like Eric Cantona. He'll be missed. He brought talent, skill and excitement. Yeah, I definitely remember those curling points from like 45, 50 metres out that he put at Croke Park just straight over the bar. And I always thought they were just the hallmark of Dermot Connolly's talent. application and hard work, and he'd definitely be missed on an inter-county scene. So the Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk, back after the news, speaking about South African rugby, the Pro 14, Oisin Murphy, all of those things on the review over the week after this. And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming live as well now. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball on Facebook, on YouTube, and on the new OTB Sports app. Download that now for iOS and Android by searching OTB Sports in your app store. Today's Saturday panel, a review of the sporting week with journalists David Kelly and Cliona Foley. We've already spoken about Dermot Connolly and Dundalk's win during the week to qualify them for the group stage of the Europa League. Speaking about that later on the show when we talk football between 3 and 5. Guys, South Africa moving to the Northern Hemisphere in rugby. So during the week, South Africa rugby voted to allow the Bulls, Stormers, Sharks and Lions complete an expanded Pro 14 competition. It will become a Pro 16 with the Cheetahs and Southern Kings set to make way, subject, I think, to legal action from the Cheetahs. This would make it a Pro 16, so a long way from the Celtic League. I remember being at the first Celtic League final about 2002. Leinster played Munster. I think Eric Miller might have been sent off. It was at Lansdowne Road, the old rickety Lansdowne Road. Now you've got the situation where South Africa seems to be moving towards the Northern Hemisphere rather than the Southern Hemisphere. Does this serve the Irish province as well, David, in your view, this whole move?
The annual existential debate about the Pro 14, 16, 18, 12, 10. Again, let's see, a good reaction. Last night I was watching, because there's a blizzard of televisual ways of getting your sport now, most of it was denied me. So Leinster Dragons was on TG Cahir, so my matriculation Irish got me through that. But only until half time, or even before half time, because when Leinster play Dragons, one thing that is always certain is the result, and the result was certain probably by the first quarter. And that in itself was an argument that the league needs to be strengthened for the benefit of the provinces, especially Leinster. Not for the reason that Leinster failed in the European Cup this season because of the lack of the strength in the Pro 14, where they'd won something like, or had compiled 25 of their successive wins in a row, most of them there. That's not the reason, because when they won Europe, nobody said, oh, the strength of the Pro 14 is the reason. A bit more of a balance needs to be bridged, though, between what the Pro 14 is at the moment for Irish provinces, which is effectively a preparation ground for their primary focus, which is Europe, unlike in France and England, where it's not the primary focus. Their primary focus is a much more traditionally embedded domestic game, because they are larger countries and have that ability to have clubs and long-standing rivalries, which we don't have here. We do have in clubs, but a decision was taken, rightly, back in the late 90s, to form a professional structure based in provinces and not clubs. And that was the correct decision. So the Pro 14 is used to prepare for Europe, and secondly, to prepare players for international rugby. And then on an even smaller basis, to bring through players from the academy, usually to play Dragons, but obviously the way the season has gone and with the pandemic, everything's been jumped around. So Johnny Sexton played against Dragons last night. Johnny Sexton hasn't played a regular league match in 2 years, I think.
He got injured.
He didn't last long either. Tightened his calf, which is another usual occurrence. So if you're looking for a competitive reason, bringing the South African teams in will strengthen the Pro 14 and stir it up a little, because the Italians haven't stirred it up, and the Welsh aren't really bothered. They have won it a few times with the Ospreys, won it 4 times, I think, in the last 15 years, but they're perennially not really bothered. They still hanker for a British and Irish league. The Scots, it's very rare to get two of the Scots punching above their weight in the same season. And there's always one of the provinces who aren't interested or not competing strongly every season. So it's not really a competitive league. So in terms of competition, yes, the South Africans will improve it. How the Irish respond to that in terms of playing players more, it's not going to happen. The players are controlled by the unions, and that will always dictate that Europe would be the priority and interprovincial clashes would be the priority for the Irish players. But in terms of getting eyeballs on it, it's better than watching Leinster Dragons on a Friday night. Yeah, it has to help, because what's there at the moment in terms of a competitive league is just not working.
We got a goal in the match between Chelsea and Crystal Palace at Stamford Bridge. Joe Rawson.
Chelsea 2, Crystal Palace 0 after Ben Chilwell opened the scoring on his Premier League debut for Frank Lampard's side. He became provider for the second. His cross into the box was headed in with a superb header, really, from Kurt Zouma. He planted it into the top corner past Vincent Gaeta. Since then, Palace have made a couple of changes as they look to try and get back into the game, but it's all Chelsea possession-wise, and they look fairly comfortable at the moment. Chelsea 2, Crystal Palace 0.
It appears some fans and administrators in South Africa are not too happy about this proposed expansion of the Pro 14 into Pro 16 and better clubs from South Africa joining the Northern Hemisphere. I'm just wondering, is the end game of this in the future possibly South Africa joining a kind of Six Nations tournament rather than being in the Rugby Championship?
Yeah, I mean, from time zone point of view and televisual market sponsorship, I mean, you know, everything is in flux. Professional rugby is but a pup. It's 25 years old. Rugby is a different sport. It's over 100 years old. Professional rugby is a completely different sport from people who this morning are, you know, changing their cars, going to AL matches and junior matches. Two completely different sports. So it's all about maximising revenue and maximising competition and aligning those things as much as possible. I mean, the US were in the conversation until they went bankrupt earlier this year. We thought a US club would be first to join before a South African club. And it was interesting that, like, you know, the South Africans on joining the Pro 14, a bit like a disgruntled in-law being invited to a wedding that they don't want to go to, possibly because there's a big championship game on the same day or something. I mean, they were basically saying, no, we can't wait to join the Pro 14, but the only reason was we're here because the other crowd didn't want us, i.e. New Zealand, who seemed to be forging ahead with a kind of Antipodean model. And the local is best, I think. International dimension is important, but I think the Six Nations works better because it's local, it's tight. The South African influx will work for the people who are not like you and I. It's television viewerships, it's advertising, it's sponsorship. It's not for necessarily for supporters. I mean, any supporter who boasts that they're going to go to South Africa for away matches, I don't think they're really sports supporters. They're rather well-endowed tourists who will have a match at the weekend at the end of their trip. It's always intrigued me, the passionate supporters who travel in three-week excursions, odysseys to the Southern Hemisphere to watch rugby teams. So yeah, it'll be all about money, TV rights, and that could be the long game. South Africa going into the Six Nations to make it an Eight Nations, and then you have a two-tier Six Nations. It's all about grabbing bucks, and whatever works, they will keep shaking that pot to see if something works. It's a struggle at the moment, though. It really is a struggle at the moment, because while we have a model here that works, it works for us in terms of a very myopic view of international rugby. Whereas I've always been an admirer, even though we sneer at it. I like the English system. I like the French system. I like that. It's a league. It's parochial. It's like GA. It's a rivalry. It's a real steadfast week on week, and it's dog eat dog, and there's relegation involved and bragging rights, and it's really competitive. And I just don't get that from the Pro 14.
There's a lack of emotion connected to the Pro 14.
Yeah, and I mean, people always say, you know, oh, you're a Munster, you're a Leinster. I enjoy going to Munster matches more than Leinster matches. That probably started in the early 2000s when it was more fun. Although I enjoyed going to Leinster and Donnybrook because you could stand at the touchline and have a cigarette and talk to Malo Kelly in a line out. But I was brought up on club stuff, you know. I was brought up on clubs and that sort of sense of rivalry, and Limerick clubs kicking the bejesus out of each other, and Northern teams coming down to Leinster and all that kind of stuff. So I just, the Leinster-Munster rivalry, and I'm guilty of flagging it up twice a year in newspapers stuff. I never got it personally, but that's just me personally. I get Dublin Meath, I get Pat's Rovers, Bowes Rovers. I just don't get Leinster, Munster, Leinster, Ulster in that sort of visceral sense.
So, you know, what do you make of all this?
Well, the one thing I think Dave's right. It's clearly money. It's clearly about where they think they're going to position themselves in the future if there's big splits, and if there is also this super club, you know, competition that's been mooted as well in Europe. So I think that's clear. But the thing that interests me is how does it affect players, actually, and the logistics of it? Because with the two teams in initially, teams were going down to South Africa and staying down there. But if you have four or six or whatever amount of South African teams, you're actually asking European players to do a lot of travelling. And where does that fit into the European Cup, and where does it work into everything else? Do you know what I mean? I think like it looks like it's one of these decisions that could be made for money's sake, but actually be really interesting physically for players, you know, if they have to do way more travelling in terms of it for a competition that is, let's face it, the B competition at the moment.
We've got another goal in the match between Chelsea and Crystal Palace at Stamford Bridge. Joe Rawson.
Chelsea 3, Crystal Palace 0. A penalty this time for Frank Lampard's side after Tammy Abraham went down in the box under a challenge from Mitchell. VAR took a look at it, but in the end awarded the spot kick Jorginho, who's already missed the penalty in the Premier League this season. And that was against Liverpool, stepped up to take the spot kick. He did his trademark hop, skip and a jump before he tapped the ball into the bottom corner. Chelsea 3, Crystal Palace 0.
5-3-1-0-6. There's plenty of passion when Connacht beat Leinster in the sports ground. That is from Jack in Galway. Cliona, you want to talk about this Irish women's initiative, this under-20 team?
Yeah, this caught my eye during the week, because a lot of the arguments in the women's game here at the moment is that just they're lacking the developmental level, or they're lacking competitiveness to help teenage players make the jump, if you like, to Six Nations level. And while there is under-18 inter-pros and that now, this is the next step. And so what really interested me is that there's a private rugby academy, if you like. I think Rugby Academy Ireland, they're based in Kildare. They have sort of come up with this idea that they're going to put together a representative team. And Fiona Hayes, Alison Miller and Jenny Murphy, really respected Irish internationals, are going to coach them. So just think it's a really interesting initiative. You'd wonder why has this come from a private organisation, if you like, as opposed to the IRFU. But I think it's a really positive one. I mean, we have brilliant talents like Bavin Parsons already, you know, very, very young teenager on the Irish team and physically well able to play at that level. But there needs to be, I think, a gap. There is a gap that needs to be leaped, and under 20. And I believe they've already lined up a friendly against the English under 20s. And that's just a great initiative. So I thought that was really good news this week, but really interesting to see where it's coming from. And the other great news this week for women's rugby is the return of Claire Malloy. Just a brilliant, brilliant player. She took a year out because of her medical studies in her work, really, in England. And she's back in, and she's going to be vital to Ireland because they've got this World Cup qualifier coming up. It's not the Six Nations, the end of the Six Nations. It's relevant for the women's team here. It is in that how well they'll gel for that, but also that they've got this World Cup qualifier in December.
The goals are flooding in at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea and Crystal Palace, another one. Joe Rawson.
Chelsea 4, Crystal Palace 0. Another penalty for Frank Lampard's side, and another goal for Jorginho from the spot. This time it was Kai Havertz who was fouled at the edge of the penalty area by Mamadou Sakho. Michael Oliver, the referee, pointed straight to the spot. No need for VAR this time, after an argument between Tammy Abraham and Jorginho and Timo Werner on who was going to take the spot kick. Jorginho had it for the second time in this game, and did what he did the first time, hot skip and a jump, and sent Vincent Gaeta the wrong way. Chelsea 4, Crystal Palace 0.
Alton Deland did a piece in the Irish Independent today. I'll just read some excerpts from it about racism. I was in Galway with my weekend on my 21st birthday with my cousin who is Ivorian. I'll never forget it. We were walking down Shop Street and some fella, I don't know what was up with him, he just started hurling racial insults at us. It ruined our night. Stuff like that is still prevalent. People get away with it. It was nice to be able to show that support fighting against that. That is taking a knee, which Ulton did. I definitely have been abused more so when I was in primary school. My brother and I used to have massive afros when we were younger. Half the time it was innocent. But I've had racial insults thrown at me during a club game when I was playing for Corinthians in Galway. If you react, you're going to get into trouble. I voiced my concern when it happened on the pitch. It was dealt with seriously after the game. The team apologised. Your manager wrote a letter to me and all that. It was quite embarrassing for the fellow involved. It's a tricky one, I suppose. You shouldn't react to it, but some people will be more upset by it than others. Simon Zeebo was speaking to Joe Molloy during the week about the very same issue.
Any area, you name it, I've had instances of racism thrown at me and other people I know and family members, etc. So,
I didn't know. What's an example of that, Simon?
My father being abused at petrol stations while I'm in the cars as a kid, on the hurling GA pitches every second game, every third game.
A shout from the sideline or from fellow players?
Players, sidelines, you name it. Yeah, socially, bars, nightlife, growing up in Cork, as a teenager hanging around Cork, everywhere. Yeah, it's literally everywhere. Right. Yeah, there's not a place where it hasn't happened, unfortunately.
Are we talking, I don't know, a sly kind of under your breath comment, or are we talking the N-word? Are we talking like overt, horrible racism?
Both, yeah. Right. Yeah, from sly and little nasty comments to the worst things that you could hear come out of somebody's mouth, I suppose. So, yeah, it's not just Ireland, though. It's unfortunately, it's everywhere, as you can see in social media. It's a culture thing that needs to change. And it's very sad. And it's annoying because it's such a stupid mentality and mindset. That it's so backwards, and that's probably the most frustrating thing about it. But yeah, we try and rise above it, I suppose.
Obviously, we have no idea what it's like that Simon and Ulton have experienced this. Even the one line in the Ulton piece, half the time it was innocent. And obviously, how, Cliona, do we educate people better around this? We can highlight it as much as we can, but how do we educate people better, I suppose, is the thing I'm thinking about today.
No, we educate our children. You know, we speak to our children as parents. That's where it starts, and it starts in our schools as well. It's really, really important. And, you know, I had an off-the-bench podcast recently with Mimi Troy, the basketball player, who related, you know, similar experiences, but again stressed, you know, I haven't experienced as bad as many of my friends, and actually said not so much in sport, but actually in their day-to-day experiences. I just think what really is fantastic is to see people, athletes of colour, speaking out now. It's terrible that they have to do it, but I think by speaking out, and I mean, just the Ulton Delan case was very interesting because he said he clearly made a complaint, it was followed up, the guy was forced to apologise. You know, you'd hope that's what changes things. I thought it was really interesting this week, John, the Landon and Donovan case, the one in San Diego. People probably heard that one in America, where a player was had a homophobic, an openly gay player had a homophobic slur against them, and the rest of the team, even though it was affecting their places in the playoffs, they walked off the field. And we've seen it in football across in Europe and across the water. This is what has to happen now. People have to take action, and that includes all of us. If we're in a stand, or if we're in a group of people at a match, or in our normal day-to-day lives, we speak out when we hear racism.
Yeah, zero tolerance, David. That has to be the way, and a consistency about driving this home all the time.
Yeah, with age comes that experience. I mean, I spoke to Curtis Fleming, who I would have known for many, 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 many years. And we had a long conversation. It was actually mainly about his mother, but we did talk about racism and him being racially abused in Dublin, and his mother telling him, "You are black, be proud of being black." But I remember, and I was chatting to Curtis, and I kind of, because it was around that time the Black Lives Matter protests were kicking off, and it almost seemed voguish at the time. But I remember speaking to Curtis and apologising, because I remember he was racially abused in Harrow's Cross, where Pats were playing at the time, and he said, "Oh, thanks for remembering that." And I said, I want to apologize, not be thanked, because I did nothing about it. None of us did anything about it. And that was my life growing up, that I did nothing about racism for many, many years. And as a society, we did nothing about it. It's wonderful now that black people are speaking out and people are speaking out on behalf of them. But I'm just piqued again that we're three white people talking about black issues. And, you know, it's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I was following the Irish women's team, and I spoke to one of the players about the possibility they would take the knee, because the Irish men's team had spoken quite vociferously, Adam Ida and Darren Maldoff, about taking the knee against Bulgaria. It didn't happen. There was no reason why it didn't happen, because UEFA didn't and haven't forbid it. The players suggested that, yeah, they would talk about it in camp ahead of the Ireland-Germany international. Nobody else. I missed the press conference at Vera Powell. I was away that particular day. Nobody asked her. Nobody asked any of the other players. Nobody followed up on it at all. It disappeared into a vacuum. Nobody took the knee. Nobody seemed to care. Nobody takes the knee in rugby matches. I mean, Alton Delan mentioned today he did. I mean, they still do it in the Premier League. But then I'm listening to black voices over there thinking that it's a bit gesture driven at this stage. So I think education is more important than gestures. Gestures, I think, are just so easily ignored. They're like T-shirts, they're like armbands. I'm not too sure if that's the piece we should be getting at. I think we should getting at education at a far more younger age than I, or with the greatest respect, both of you. I think it's a younger age, the age of my children. And my experience, my education has come too late, sadly, for me to do anything. And I wish I had the knowledge now. I wish I had the knowledge then that I do now, because then I might have done something, but I didn't. And I was silently racist. And I think a lot of us are silently racist. We won't go start talking about other issues. So I think education from a younger age is the piece we need to be. But I think that goes beyond sport.
Sorry, can I interject there? The Irish women's team did take the knee at their last international, the soccer team. And that was, I thought that was...
Well, that's wonderful.
What I was surprised was that it didn't get more attention like you, Dave, because I was delighted to see it, and I thought it reflected exactly how gutsy they are.
Well, you say silently racist. Not coming out, I think. Is that...
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Just standing idly by. But also... Even when we're being volubly anti-racist, there's a lot of gesture-driven, you know, there's a social media age of liking tweets and liking Facebook posts. But how much genuinely, as a society, are we doing it? As I'm not talking about sports journalists. I'm talking just as educators and as society leaders and. The examples in our world. I think it goes beyond gestures and sport.
Just to finish, the Ark is 100 years old tomorrow, David. Will you have an interest in it? Enable looking to win the race for a third time. We see.
I don't know. We're not really touching on it, but I just think. You know, there's a prominent case this week, which we're not too sure what the outcome. We hope that the outcome would be positive for our champion jockey. But, you know, Frankie Dettori, like, horse racing is just it is an individual sport for me. The jockeys are just extraordinary people, and Frankie Dettori has been through the mill in his personal life, and has had his demons, and to be still standing. Nearing, I think he's slightly older than me, actually. Certainly nearer 50 than I am. And, you know, he might just crown a career with an extraordinary partnership tomorrow. I just think it's an amazing story, and it's a wonderful reflection of how sport can heal, you know, damaged people, people who damage themselves. I also think of Kieran Fallon, and so many didn't get the chance to do that. I mean, during this wonderful lockdown period, in some respects, it gives you reflections. I spoke to Steve Cawthon and Cash Asmussen, but Steve Cawthon, who would have been a childhood hero of mine, but speaking to him, and he had alcohol problems, but also bulimic problems in terms of just that daily battle to make a weight and drinking champagne and chewing meat and then just upheaving into the toilets. And he never went near drugs, but so many of our great horse people have problems with their psychosis, and with that leads them into drugs and alcohol. And I just think
they have a problem with the way the whole thing is structured, with the fact that it's completely unnatural to do what they're doing. In a way, you're sitting on half a ton of a horse that's going about 30 miles an hour, and you're not at your natural weight.
Yes, indeed. It started off with 150 years ago, kind of 3 or 4 stone 16-year-olds. Yeah, I mean, it's a freakish sport, but I mean, a lot of sports in different ways push bodies and push mentalities to different limits. So horse racing has a unique set of challenges, but the challenges are not unique to the sports people involved therein. If you choose any sport, they involve sacrifices, and even in our amateur sports, we can see the desperation of isolation in terms of gambling and relationship issues. So I just think it's extraordinary to see Frankie Dettori do what he's doing tomorrow, and I hope he does it. I really do. I'd be cheering for him. I won't put any money on. I don't gamble anymore, but I'd be cheering.
You don't
for
need
him.
To, Dave. You don't need to. Cliona, will you have an interest? Will you watch it at all? We've got about 40 seconds left.
No, only simply because I don't understand flat racing. I'd go anywhere to watch jump racing, but flat racing bores me, which is a terrible thing to say to you.
Well, Cliona, you didn't bore me for the last hour, neither did you, David. Some great topics, racism, Dermot Connolly, the Pro 14. Thanks for joining us for the review of the week. And obviously, it was great to see Dundalk win this week. And we'll chat to you again soon on the Sunday papers or on the panel.
Thanks, guys. See you, Cliona.
David and Cliona, they're on Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk Football between 3 and 5. We're back after the break.
Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.